Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president Local 237 Teamsters. With me, we have a very special guest, Congressman Gregory Meeks. From public housing to the nation's capital, a true American success story. Now in his 13th term, Congressman Meeks is chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the first Black member of the Congress to serve as chair of that committee. Congressman Gregory Meeks, welcome to Reaching Out. And thank you for being here.
And thank you for reaching out.
Ha! You're the first one ever to say that. That's good. That's good. So you are the first Black chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee. For those of us who are listening, tell us what that means.
Well, look, it's significant and important in a number of ways. Number one, 4 years of an administration that basically disconnected from the rest of the world to now to reconnect with the rest of the world and say that the United States is back at the table is important. But to come from a background such as I have, being born in East Harlem and living in public housing and pushing my way up through public education and then going on to Adelphi University and Howard University School of Law, living through as a young child the civil rights struggles, watching and listening to the differences of individuals across the globe. I bring all of that perspective, you know, my life history to this chairmanship. And so through the eyes and the experiences that I have had, it has been different, or it is different, than what any other chairman has had on this Foreign Affairs Committee. And so reaching out and collaborating, understanding that the United States of America needs to work in a multilateral way with other countries is tremendously important. And understanding that, you know, we don't talk to individuals or look at individual countries in a superiority way, because clearly we've made our own mistakes and still are making our mistakes right here in the United States. So we're going to make sure that we stand up for human rights and civil rights and here in the United States of America. But also we're going to make sure that those same values upheld with our allies as well as our adversaries around the world, because it's who I am, and it's very important to me that we do that, to make sure that there's non-discrimination and that we end racism and sexism and anti-Semitism, Islamophobia. You know, all of those things, if you have the experience of an African-American, you probably experience some, if not all, or seen or witnessed some, if not all, of those things. And so therefore, it becomes deeply embedded in you to make a change and a difference so that we can have a better world. And I think that's why this is significant. And I know it's why it's important for me and why I'm proud to sit as the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee.
Yeah, you know, something that you said came to mind, the crisis at our southern border. And, you know, it's those who think that we could keep people out and it's the other country's problems. But, you know, being an amateur, I understand that if you help other countries, you keep the people there. There's no need for them to migrate to our country. So I think a little investment goes a long way to solving a big problem. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that when you see the situation on our southern border, that those are individuals that are fleeing from something. Not that they just want to come to the United States because everything was good at home, or they just want to come to the United States. Some of them are fleeing violence, fleeing poverty, fleeing being a persecuted, fleeing climate change because it has affected the economies in their countries, fleeing the lack of democracy in some countries. So they're fleeing to get away, fleeing corruption, to try to get and have a better life. It is like what folks were talking about with many of the folks that were immigrants from other parts of the world who came here to have a better life because they were fleeing something at that time also. So it's a similar concept. And you are absolutely right Mr. President, that if we join in partnership with some of the countries on our southern border, and we help them so that they have security, as we've done in some other countries, so that there are job opportunities and educational opportunities there, then you'll find that those individuals will not want to migrate here. In fact, most would love to be able to do something here and go back home because their family members are there. So it's not that they just want to come in. They're just trying to make sure that they have a better life. And if they can have that better life at their native land, they'll do that. So the small amount of money that we would have to invest to try to help make that happen will be well worth it, in my estimation.
Thank you. Thank you. And what are your goals, or what is the agenda of the Foreign Affairs Committee for this session?
Well, look, one of the things that I want to make sure that we are doing is we're engaged with the rest of the world. For the last 4 years under the prior presidential administration, it was America alone or America only. So I want to engage to make sure that our allies know that we are back at the table and we want to work with them in a respectful way. And I also want to make sure that we in the United States are working with and dealing with countries that we might not have had the kind of investment and relationship that we should. Countries that were basically left out, like countries in Central and South America and the Caribbean. They are very important because we share this hemisphere. And so when we look at what has taken place over the last 14, 16 months with this pandemic, I want to make sure that we're getting and doing vaccine diplomacy, getting vaccines to people in the Caribbean and in Central and South America. Number one, not only is it good for them, it's good for us, because if they're not safe, then we're really not safe. Number two, I want to make sure that we're also investing and starting to work on the with countries on the continent of Africa. They are the fastest growing and youngest continent on the planet. And so therefore we should be getting engaged now, because it's the right and smart thing to do. Because when you look at where we will be 10, 15 years from now, where that continent, if we're invested in working together, it will make a substantial difference. And as well as making sure that we're interconnected with all of the countries around the world to deal with climate change, because we share this earth. No matter where you are on the earth, it is shared space. We only have one planet. And as we can see by all odds, that the climate is affecting the very way that people live around the globe, we need to make sure that we're interacting and working collectively so that we can save this planet. And our committee will have a huge role in doing just that and working internationally to make that happen.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. Very special guest is Congressman Meeks, who is the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee. What is Congress doing to ensure our democratic process continues? And what I mean by that is voter fairness. What are we going to do to make sure that every vote counts?
Yeah, Greg, that's a great question, because we can see again the results of the former president who erroneously and without any evidence, without any facts being articulated or in a court, based upon every court just about in which they challenged the last election, we see that there are states around the country that are trying to change the laws to make it harder for people to vote, especially people of color and people who are poor and women. They don't want to make it easier to vote. They want to make it harder to vote. And for me, just a quick glance at history shows how wrong that is, because all you have to do is to look at what took place after the Emancipation Proclamation in the 1800s, during the time of when the slaves was freed. They had the right to vote. Reconstruction took place. And the cornerstone of Reconstruction was voting. And if you look at that particular time, for the first time, you had people getting elected to Senate, the U.S. Senate, to the United States Congress, to governors, to mayors, all throughout. And so when they saw that the diversity and what was happening when people would come out to vote, what do? They changed the laws to make it harder for them to vote. So now in order to vote, you have to know the number of jelly beans in a jar, which no one knows. You have to, you know, had to put all kinds of restrictions on individuals so that they could not vote. And what happened then? Of course, the country changed. Jim Crowism was set in to be the law of the land all over the place. People were denied the right to vote. And you saw what took place and what we had to suffer through for over 100 years. Well, so it is today. Barack Obama got elected in 2008. We had this backdrop of a president for 4 years, and you saw the people come out in record numbers again to make sure that that person was not elected again. And you hear from many of the Republican members of Congress, especially, and state legislators, who say the sole reason that they want to change the voting laws is because if they did not, then they don't feel that they could win a fair election. So what are we doing was your question. Well, in the Congress, there's two major bills that we passed in the House and now we're languishing in the Senate. And that's first is H.R. 1, which we call the For the People Act, as well as H.R. 4, which is called the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And they are complementary pieces of legislation that are aimed to combat the corruption and reform voting rights to combat, you know, the corruption of what some of these state legislatures are trying to do to make it harder for folks to vote and reform the voting rights in order to preserve democracy, which is exactly what John Lewis did with Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement when we passed in 1964 and 65 the Voting Rights and the Civil Rights Act. And so this is trying to roll back what those accomplishments are. And the courts rolled back some of the protections also. This puts that back into place so that we can make sure that democracy is preserved here in the United States. Now, both of these bills, I should let you know, Greg, passed the United States House of Representatives, and they're languishing now in the Senate. This is also shows where turning out to vote in record numbers is extremely important. Well, I'm proud that we did so that the Senate is at least 50-50 right now with Vice President Kamala Harris breaking breaking this tie. But for most of and much of the Senate, in order to pass a bill or to get a bill through the Senate, you don't need a mere majority. You need 60 votes. And so the bills that we have are trying to negotiate to get through is to attempt to get 60 votes in the Senate, which means we still need 10 Republicans to join us on that bill to get it passed. So we're still fighting for it, we're trying to make sure that that happens. But we need this legislation that will prevent the state legislatures and the states around the country from passing bills that would inhibit people's voting rights.
Yeah, we may have a better chance of playing for the Knicks than getting 60 votes in the Senate at this moment.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so
it's hard playing for the Knicks now. They played; they had a good season. So
yeah, they had a good.
Somebody said we could have played for the Knicks, but I couldn't say that this year.
They had a good season, but I still say we have a better chance of playing for the Knicks than.
Yes, sir. I agree with you.
So, is there another plan if you can't get 60 votes on those two bills? Is there something else we could do? What about the Justice Department looking into some of the laws that are being passed? I have heard nothing from the Justice Department. The Justice Department has just been silent on the issue.
Well, the Justice Department can't intervene with the legislative process.
No, I'm talking about the laws that have been passed in the state to go to court to try to get them overturned.
Yeah, well, there will be lawsuits as those things will pass. And I think that we see organizations, for example, like the NAACP and others, will be taking those cases to court to try to get them upheld, try to get them reversed. So those things will take place. But the best thing that can happen, and the best thing that I urge folks, is irrespective of what they're trying to do, let's make sure and become more determined than ever that we're going to come out to vote. And so as we look to the 2021 elections in mayor races and municipal races as it's taking place now, you know, because it starts not just voting for the president of the United States, you've got to vote every election. And sometimes the local elections, not sometimes, all the time, the local elections are just as important as the presidential elections, because that's what determines a lot of your local issues and your local laws and positions. So in this go round in New York City, for example, you know, in just a few weeks on June 22nd, you will be voting for mayor and controller and public advocate, and all of our city council seats will be available. So we need folks to come out to vote in New York City and other places where they're now having these primary races, and then come out again in November. And then, of course, in 2022, every House seat is out and up for re-election. And we've got to come out. And so those of us who are from upstate New York or living downstate, or living, you know, in another state down south or the Midwest someplace where you see folks are not voting or trying to push laws that are in your interest, you need to contact your folks that you know in those areas and get them out to vote. Me, as chair of the Congressional Black Caucus's Political Action Committee, we're already the Congressional Black Caucus on the ground in several jurisdictions and several areas all across the country, just staying in touch with voters and understanding what they're trying to do, but trying to make sure that they're not successful. Because then if we come out and we elect the people that we need to elect, then some of what they've done, we can reverse by changing the laws ourselves.
Yes. And, you know, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about people not being able to vote in 2022 because of laws being passed. And I think that is the goal. I mean, people may want to vote, but they may be prevented from voting because of laws.
Well, this is why, you know, what they will say is that like some of the laws saying you got to have ID, but we're going to work together to make sure that individuals have the appropriate and proper ID. Some are trying to limit the days of which you can go to early voting. Well, and going, you know, what we have in a lot of places, especially to the South, what they call souls to the polls. So right after church on a Sunday, you go straight to the polls. They're trying to change the time so that there is, you know, saying that the polls won't open until 3 o'clock, as opposed to being open when folks just get out of church and they can get in the van and go back. So we've got to make sure that if those laws have passed, then we've got to make sure for this time that we won't let them win. So we'll stick around and we'll pay the price of waiting that extra hour or so and still going to vote, because that's the way that we'll be able to reverse and say, you know, let's use that as their as our motivation to say we're not going to be deterred. We're not going to be stopped. You know, we're going to make sure that we get in there to vote for the person of our choice. And I just say that, you know, when you think about it, you know, I was a young kid, you know, some young people wasn't around back then, but folks died. That's how important it was. Folks died. They were willing to sacrifice everything. It was beaten and bit by dogs because they were not going to be turned around from being able to vote. And guess what? Ultimately, they won. So we've got to have that same determination all across this nation to say we're not going to be deterred from getting our, you know, our opportunity to vote, so that we can make sure that we keep moving this country forward.
Yeah, we might have to have go vote after Sunday school and cut the sermon really, really short. Just might have to just say amen, go to the polls.
We need to do whatever it is that we have to do, that's for sure.
Yes.
And we'll come up with those strategies and talk about them so that we can make sure that we accomplish them.
So we hear about the infrastructure that the president has made a pillar of his presidency, at least his first term, his first year in office. So where are we with the infrastructure bill?
Well, it was just announced just yesterday that some of the negotiations have broke down with the president and the Republican members of the Senate. So there's a big issue that's going on. We passed a transportation infrastructure, human infrastructure bill out of the House. Here again, it's something that then was pushed over to the Senate, and we're waiting for the Senate to make a motion to agree upon doing it. The President of the United States have been negotiating with a number of Republicans. Remember that he had put forward a $2.6 trillion package on infrastructure. And that infrastructure included physical infrastructure and human infrastructure. And in the course of negotiating, he was agreed to reduce, and hoping to get some of the Republicans to buy in, to reduce the size of his infrastructure bill from $2.6 trillion to somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.8. The Republicans said that they wanted to separate first. They talked about physical infrastructure as opposed to human infrastructure. So physical infrastructure is bridges and tunnels and ports, airports and ports, roads, things of that nature. Human infrastructure is housing, is education, it's jobs. So we think that we need to both, you know, to fix all, you know, as well as, you know, you're talking about trying to look at things for the future and where we go there. So it looks as though that now has broken down with this group of senators. The president went on a trip to Europe. When he comes back, there's another group, a bipartisan group, that's trying to put something together so that we can see if we can get some type of an agreement so that we can move forward. And in my estimation, we need to get something. We may not get everything that we want, but it is so important that, you know, because our infrastructure is ranked 13th globally in terms of the quality of our infrastructure. We've got to do something there. And we've got to create the jobs that can make a difference for Americans also. So my hope is that there is a compromise someplace so that we can get some good as opposed to nothing, because our infrastructure, both human and physical, desperately needs the resources.
If that were to pass, what infrastructure would you like to see for New York?
Well, there's a lot, you know, of course, improvement on our rails, you know, with the MTA, who suffered a lot, and we can update the MTA, our bus infrastructure. You know, I've got a project that I put in the infrastructure bill to improve the Van Wyck Expressway, that's access, you know, to up and down, because, you know, the traffic that's there all the time, especially trying to, you know, get into the airport. I also have a bill in trying to get some $5 million to help reduce the flooding that's taking place in southeastern Queens and in Elmont. So we'll be looking to do that to try to end flooding in our communities and areas. And to me, it's also important that we use infrastructure money to improve our schools and housing, which is big issues in New York City. So, you know, those would be emphasis, or those are emphasis of which I am pushing forward to get done.
Thank you. And we're running out of time. We have about 30 seconds. Your last thought?
My last thought is thank you, Mr. President, for all that you work, all that you do. So we know that the country is only good and as strong as our workers. And you have led and continue to lead in making sure that our workers are getting a fair shake, a fair treatment, good health care, good pay, livable wages. That's been your fight and your struggle. And I thank you for your leadership. And I look forward to continuing working with you and reaching out to the people of New York.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming on. We may ask you to come back depending on what happens in Congress, but we appreciate you responding and being here with us. You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest was Congressman Gregory Meeks, Chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Thank you very much for coming on Reaching Out.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, President of Teamsters Local 237.
The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.